the top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, here we go, everybody. What a historic week. It's been really the historic 10 days since Joe Biden offered Donald Trump that debate. And to the stunning surprise, according to almost everybody, Donald Trump said yes. No qualification, no equivocation, said yes. I picked the network? Yes. You picked the duration? Yes. You picked the moderators? Yes. You picked the date? Yes. Game on. And since that time, Joe Biden's world has fallen apart. Carly Shimkus is here to break it down, then Rich Lowry, the National Review. But before we get to Carly and tell you everything that's happening today, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Excuse me one Americans second, Ambassador. How do you know that Joe Biden's not going to finish his term? What is that based on?
Why can't he come down here and assure us he's okay?
Did the president get examined by a doctor, or did he get a neurological scan?
Was he okay? What happened?
Yeah. George Stephanopoulos, and then the White House press corps yesterday. Media now hits a new low as they suddenly discover this White House is 100% dysfunctional, and a president who works part-time and only clear-headed some of the time is suddenly under scrutiny. Like, for example, the Russia hoax that the media ignored and they got awards for, which they greased, and their irresponsibility they never apologized for, and now here we go again.
Number two.
And I just think Kamala Harris would thrive in a debate with Donald Trump. She would be, I think, very well received in the industrial Midwest with working class voters. You know, I just say, what are we waiting for?
Really? Tim Ryan, former Ohio congressman, dying for some media spotlight. If Joe goes, who steps in? We look at the possible matchups and likelihoods as Gavin Newsom and Kamala Harris head to Washington to show Biden they got their back. They got his back. But do they?
Number one.
Right now, I am for Joe Biden.
I just feel that it's time for him to step aside.
Joe Biden is our nominee.
Do you think he should drop out of the race?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that there are stronger options out there.
And that is the congressman from Texas. These are all Democrats. Operation Save Joe in full stride, but it might be too late. Drama everywhere as he fills his schedule to show that he can suddenly do the job. Carly, welcome. We've been doing Fox and Friends today, and still, this is changing since we started the show yesterday.
Yeah, there's been today. Even more fallout, especially with media headlines and these leaks and everybody talking about how internally Democrats are in turmoil and the party is divided, and Democrats want, some of them are sticking with him, but then there's this report that there are 25 congressional Democrats who are going to be watching Joe Biden over the next few weeks. Right. And if he stumbles, they are going to collectively call for him to step down.
So we got this. So the president's going to try to show that he could do the job. Emergency meeting today at 9:30 with his cabinet. He's going to have lunch with Vice President Harris. Wow, that's going to be tough. I wonder if it's going to be a prompter there. Remarks at the Medal of Honor ceremony at the White House. He always screws himself up on his best days, and then meeting with Democratic governors in the Roosevelt room. But the governors met without him yesterday, and I think one of the big mistakes he has made, another self-inflicted one, besides screwing up the debate, not getting bad answers, but just his demeanor, his approach, his confusion, but not reaching out to congressional leaders and congressmen and women and saying, guys, steady the ship, don't worry, I got this. Whatever the explanation is, he never reached out. So they're just listening to their constituents call in. They're reading everything they're reading. They're going, is my race in jeopardy? Is my Senate seat in jeopardy? And now he's trying to do some damage control.
Yeah, and it's like truly unheard of. Kayleigh McEnany was talking about the Trump White House and how Donald Trump was constantly on the phone with Republican senators, governors, congresspeople, questioning them on what they think, how they feel, how he should phrase things. For Joe Biden to not reach out after the disastrous debate is surprising in one sense, but also not surprising at all. I think they're all in shock and they just don't know how to message this. And over the past 5 days, they've come up with a plan where Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday went out to talk to the press. What a job. And she delivered the same lines over and over again. It's the line that they have. He had a bad night. We understand how Americans feel, but look at his record. But then if you look at his record, you can't even spin that as a positive. But going back to what you said about not reaching out to Hakeem Jeffries or Chuck Schumer or any of the Democratic governors, I think they were just in shock and didn't know how to handle it.
Right. Or they just are so insular with their four people, five people, his sister, his wife, Jeff Zients, and Ron Klain, and a few other names that they just figure, we're just going to pull ahead. What do they got? I got 1,000 delegates. What can they do? That's what Mark Thiessen was saying last night. He's saying, guys, stop freaking out. He's got all the cards. Cut 23.
Well, I think what's indicative is they're panicking, but they're running around like chickens without a head. They don't have a solution to their problem because they can't remove Joe Biden. Because, I mean, number one, they can't get past the Kamala Harris problem. The party of identity politics is not going to replace her. She's next in line. The party of identity politics is not going to kick the first black woman vice president to the curb and replace her with a white male. So there's no Josh Shapiro. There's no Gavin Newsom. None of these guys are going to get the nomination over Kamala Harris. And she's less popular than he is. RCP average is 39, hers is 36. And she probably doesn't want him to leave the ticket because if he wins, she becomes president because there's no way he's going to serve 4 years. So she's going to become, if she stays on the ticket, this ticket stays intact, she becomes president. The second problem they have is, what's the alternative?
Yeah, it's a great point. And then to echo what Mark was just saying, there's this quote in Semaphore, which is a political website, from a longtime Democratic donor who said, Kamala Harris is more threatening to those swing voters than a dead Joe Biden or comatose Joe Biden. So if Joe has to go, it's going to be Kamala. And if it's Kamala, it's going to be harder. Also, right. Monetarily, I mean, there's the Biden-Harris campaign fund, and that money does not transfer over to another candidate. So they would be at a money deficit as well. As a huge time deficit, it's only 4 months until November.
And the other thing that I pointed out today on TV is that Trump's on a roll. The numbers came in on how much they earned the last quarter. It's something I never thought I'd say. The Trump team has outraised the Biden team. Mm-hmm. That's before the meltdown at the debate. And lawfare seems to be falling apart. Even the sentencing, July 11th, has been pushed to September. The immunity makes all those cases that Jack Smith is bringing forward questionable. And the Georgia case run by two terrible people, Nathan Wade and Fannie Willis, is also in jeopardy because of their ethics violations. And Trump just seems to be very disciplined on the stump. But I want to bring you to Nikki Haley, because anybody like you or I who brings up things, or Sean Hannity or says, well, you know, Joe Biden had a terrible appearance. Joe Biden was confusing leaving the stage. Joe Biden had to be let off by Barack Obama. Joe Biden seems to be lost. Joe Biden came out after the Robert Hur report, makes a defiant statement, and then says al-Sisi, the president of Egypt, is actually the president of Mexico. And we point out that this shows he can't lead, and people say, just keep your mouth shut. We don't see anything here. So listen to this exchange, and now think about where we're at right now. Cut 25.
The Republican nominee likely be running against not Kamala Harris, but Joe Biden. Why would it be better to vote for a convicted felon than President Joe Biden?
Well, you're assuming that he's convicted, and you're assuming he's going to be the nominee,
no,
George.
You
and
were
I
asked a question that was based on that assumption, and you said you would vote for him.
Well, first of all, a vote for Joe Biden is a vote for Kamala Harris. You know that, and I know that. There is no way that Joe Biden's going to finish his term. I think Kamala Harris is going to be the next president, and that should send a chill up every American spine. But I also think the fact that we have a primary.
Excuse me. One second, Ambassador. How do you know that Joe Biden's not going to finish his term? What is that based on?
Ask Americans, do you think he's going to finish his term? Do you think that he's actually going to finish what he started? We look at the decline he's had over the last few years. You have to be honest with the American people, George. There's no way that Joe Biden's going to finish out a next term. We can't have an 81-year-old president.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, that was an interview that Nikki Haley did with George Stephanopoulos defending Joe Biden, who is going to be doing that Friday interview, that Friday sit down with President Biden as sort of a chance at President Biden to redeem himself from the debate. But Nikki Haley has been, when she was running against former President Trump, she said that over and over again, that you're not running against Joe Biden, you're running against Kamala Harris. And I'm sure that when she was watching the debate, she was thinking, man, I told you so. And the other thing is that I think we're thinking about Joe Biden right now, but have you heard interviews from his debate performances in 2019. There's such a marked difference in terms of decline over the last 5 years. Well, he's going to be 5 years older at the end of a second term. So when Joe Biden says he wants to be president, he's not saying I want to be president now. He's also saying I want to be president when I'm 86 years old.
Right.
What's that going to look like?
And he's saying that I almost fell asleep during the debate. He actually said I almost fell asleep during the debate.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I made a mistake not listening to my staff and going back and forth to Europe. No. And you pointed out it's 13 days in between when you got back from Europe, your debate prep where you slept till 10, took a nap in the afternoon. Don't tell me you're worn out from Europe. And if you are, that's more proof that you can't do the job.
Say less, Joe. You're hurting yourself. He was at this campaign event in McLean, Virginia, which is not a swing district, by the way. It's like deep blue. And he told people there, he's like, I should have listened to my staff. I was going back and forth to Europe, and I almost fell asleep on the debate stage. If you could have said anything to make things worse for yourself, that would be it. Are you kidding me?
I mean, and you see some of the cutaways where you see his head go down, and you wonder what he's thinking. So, and I just don't know how you do that. The adrenaline usually through the roof. You speak too fast.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't listen enough.
Right.
And all I could tell you is, Carly, he picked the date. He picked the time. He picked the venue. He picked the city. He picked the moderators. He chose the podium. He had everything.
Yes.
Trump goes, all right, I'll debate. Now, I talked to Jason Miller, and I said, Jason, why is he doing this? Why is he debating? And he said, because I believe, this is before the debate, I believe because they never thought we'd accept and would make us look like we were afraid or they'd have a narrative.
Yep.
Because since the trial, and we said anytime, anywhere, we believed it. And I said, well, why didn't you negotiate a little bit? Because that would have given them an opportunity to bow out. Man, that was brilliant.
Look, totally.
These are decisions. Like, it's not, well, I'm so glad it was a sunny day when we got married. That's luck.
Mm-hmm. This is strategy.
This is strategy.
Failed strategy. I also think that the debate rules really favor Donald Trump because the mics and cutting off the mics really did work. Like every now and then you could kind of hear them trying to talk over it. You couldn't hear what they were saying. So when the mics are off, you leave room for President Biden to stumble and no one's going to bail him out. And then before the debate, I mean, this is like ancient history at this point, but it was a big question at the time, is that there were so many leaks over Joe Biden's strategy. He was going to try and bait Trump into a fight. So now
did.
Trump knows that.
Yeah.
It's like showing the country that you're fighting your war plans. And they're going to say, okay, well, now I'll work around that.
I'm going to take a short break, come back more, Carly Shimkus, and then Rich Lowry at the bottom of the hour. We're following all the breaking news to see what's going to happen with all these high-stakes meetings today behind the scenes. And who are these Democrats that are threatening to defect from the Biden camp? You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show and a consequential edition of this big broadcast.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm having people called, you know, people that I attended a 12-step meeting with 40 years ago who are getting the call from the DNC. Literally hundreds of people looking for any shred of dirt about me. Vanity Fair gave them a dumpster to put all this stuff in. You can tell, you know, the quality of their research from the fact that they said that I, you know, they did this story that I ate a dog. And they have a picture of me supposedly eating a dog. Of course, it's not a dog. And they said I was eating a dog in Korea. And that they had checked with experts, metadata experts, and identified it as Korea, and checked with veterinarians who validated that it was a dog and it's a goat.
Put it this way, when you're trying to disseminate between a goat and a dog and you're running for president, I'm pretty sure you're losing. That's RFK Jr. Obviously, they put a Vanity Fair story together that devastated, talks about drugs and trysts, and doesn't really deny it except for it's a goat, not a dog. So it makes him seem, you know, this is what he did have a crazy upbringing, and he did some crazy things, and he did have addiction problems, and He's come out of it. Now he's in good shape. But this definitely shows you, you better be make sure your closet's cleaned out before you run for president. Or expose it yourself.
Man, I don't know what to say about it, other than who knew dogs would be such a big part of
Christy
this presidential election cycle.
Don't eat dogs, don't shoot dogs. Yeah. That's all we ask.
Well, that was a clip from Martha's show yesterday, right? He was on Martha's show.
Yes.
Man, she does such a good job. And she was funny about that question. I mean, it was right on the heels of Karine Jean-Pierre's press conference. And you could tell that he is a smart guy. And he is, you know, he's got the lawyer background. It sounds like he's really thinking about the questions that are posed to him. And he gave some good answers about the state of Joe Biden and the race. But then she posed that dog question and he cleared it up. He said it was a goat. I mean, well, I guess I don't know what either look like based on the picture.
Or taste like.
No, I don't. But that's, yeah, you're right. If you're defending the fact that you ate a dog or a goat, it's not a good week for you.
Well, yeah. I think we've always said that.
Yeah. Oh, that's
but
actually
not just not on the air.
I have that as a bumper sticker on my car.
Right. I don't think you have a car.
I don't have
a car. Yeah. So you're not telling the truth.
My
are
imaginary
you? Can
car,
we possibly have honesty in our relationship? Carly Chimkis. So yesterday, they made it clear the Trump team that they wanted to push back the sentencing on July 11th. Mm-hmm. Or get rid of the case entirely because of the immunity, should be immune for things you do as President of the United States in the office, and then let a lower court decide. They said in the interim, Attorney General moved back the sentencing date, and Alvin Bragg did. Mikey Cook, a Trump surrogate, said this about the move. Cut 33.
I definitely believe this is going to be thrown out altogether. The Supreme Court was very clear about presidential immunity. And look, at the end of the day, President Trump has been right all along. There was inadmissible evidence that was presented in this New York case. It should have been thrown out from the get-go. We had a biased judge. And now for this judge, Juan Merchan, to finally realize that the rule of law is going to prevail and he has to at least push sentencing, it's only a matter of time before he realizes he needs to dismiss this case and it will be a case closed slam dunk for Team Trump.
That's pretty much, you know, she's hoping. I don't think it's going to go away, especially with this judge. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's this judge's decision, right? So in terms of sentencing, not surprised that it's moved back, especially if there's a political calculation there. I mean, you're moving it back, so you're sort of kicking the ball past the RNC conventions. But it's closer to the election, so it becomes an election headline, whatever his sentencing might be. So that could be a negative, you know, when it's all said and done, depending on what the sentencing is. The other thing is, I mean, a minor legal point, but what they're hinging this on is that they used evidence in the trial from President Trump's time in office. And because of the Supreme Court decision, now you're saying, well, it's immunity, you can't do that. The other thing, though, that I was thinking about is that he signed all those checks when he was in office, which seems like a bigger deal to me than messages that he sent Michael Cohen. So I'm no legal expert, but I mean, if you're signing the checks and the checks are the issue and that's his time in office, then you got to go, is this a presidential power or blah, blah, blah. So I think that you do have a case there, but ultimately, man, you're still in New York, so who knows what's going to happen.
Right.
But you're still in a very biased city.
But at least for 2 months, I think. We're not going to be talking about legal cases.
Correct.
And we're going to go to the RNC, and we'll finally get a look at a schedule and not wonder if the president's going to have jail time or weekend jail time or anything,
which
right?
Which is crazy. That's almost as crazy as the dog.
Thanks, Carly.
Bye.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
There is a pattern, discernible pattern, of Democratic officials seemingly trying to convince you, the public, to not believe what you saw and what you heard with your eyes and with your ears on Thursday night. The spinning is all very reminiscent of the George Orwell quote from the book 1984 that I invoked 5 years ago for a different situation and a different president.
Wow, that was Jake Tapper. You know what that shows me, too? It shows me that up close and personal, Biden was even worse because he's the moderator. That's how disconcerting it was to him. But to Jake Tapper's credit, He knew that he said all these horrible things about Trump. He knew that there were 70 million people and probably more that are voting for Trump again. And he knew that if he showed a biasness here, his career was probably over unless he just wanted to stay on MSNBC. But he never had credit and CNN. He'd never have credibility again. But I look at so many people in the media now writing these comprehensive reports on everything going on behind the scenes that shows that over the last 6 months, especially, that Joe Biden's in rapid decline. I'm thinking about Carl Bernstein that now comes out. I'm thinking about Maggie Haberman, Peter Baker from The New York Times. That comes out. Now, all of a sudden, they got all these stories about the leader of Italy saying it became clear to her that she had to take care of Joe Biden and look out for him at the G7. Where were those articles 2 weeks ago? If he said it, where are your reports? Who are your sources? Rich Lowry, editor of the National Review, joins us now. Rich, welcome. Your thoughts about the media waking up to Joe Biden being asleep.
The dam is broken. It's completely broken. Jake Tapper's an indication there. Now, he has maybe a little selfish interest because part of the blame game is directed to him for supposedly not fact-checking Donald Trump in real time, which is not the function of debate moderators. But he's just saying what's obvious, what's been obvious for a very long time. I think, Brian, we've talked about how when it all comes out, people are going to say how bad it was with Biden and all the things they did to protect them in their memoirs and whatnot. But the dam is broken right now because of that debate performance. And Democrats are just in a terrible box, a terrible situation. The way to cure it is for Biden to have the good sense to say, you know what, I just can't do this anymore. This is a mistake, to decide to run again and decide to step aside. Doesn't seem like they're going to do that. So then they have the choice. You know, they have the Lloyd Doggett choice. Is everyone going to do what he does and say in public what they think in private or not? Biden's counting on not, and that's probably a better bet.
Jared Golden of Maine writes this: I suggest that he step out. But it did not matter, since it has been clear for months that Donald Trump is going to win. He goes on to say that the 81-year-old's poor performance in the debate last week against Trump was not a surprise. But demurred about Biden should actually step aside and allow another Democrat on top of the ticket, dismissing it as post-debate hand-wringing. He went on to say, Trump is going to win, and I'm okay with that. So he said that a Democrat over in the Bangor Mail. Whitney Tilson sounds like how I feel, a longtime Wall Street investor and Democratic donor. We all knew what we were seeing, and we were amazed that other people weren't reporting it. So was he. Said, I feel like I've been deceived. Biden and the people around him have been deceiving the American people. The dam was broken. We all know. We can all see what we've been lied to. He's a longtime Wall Street investor and Democratic donor. So there's other people who feel that way. Today, Biden will try to assure Democratic governors led by Tim Walz. You think it's possible?
That he reassures them?
Yep.
It depends on what the will to believe is, you know, how desperate they are to believe in the fantasy that he can do this until November and then can do it until January. January, what, 2029, right? It's completely absurd. It's the most preposterous American public has ever been asked to believe by a major political party. But the thing is, Brian, they succeeded at the State of the Union, right? The expectations were low. He read a teleprompter speech at night, did some back and forth with hecklers, and they just should have sat on that, right? They never should have agreed to the debates. And then they would have had all these Democrats believing, right, or believing enough. But then they went out and did the debate, and now teleprompter's not enough. You know, they'll try to make it enough. They did, you know, oh, he's so much better at the North Carolina rally. Yeah, with the teleprompter. But everyone knows that's the crutch. And if you take it out, you're not going to see the same kind of performance. So it just, again, the calculation that's sort of applied for the last year is, you know what, he's not great, but what's the alternative? It's going to be hard to get him out. He's never going to voluntarily decide to go, and there's no mechanism for firing him. Therefore, we just need to go along with it and say he's great. And it's probably that dynamic will continue to hold. But, you know, there's a little erosion here, right? You begin to see some elected Democrats saying, no, we can't do this. But it's got to be, you know, it's got to be Obama and Clinton. It can't just be Lloyd Doggett.
Right. But if he still says no, what are they going to do? Unless they have information on him to extort him. Unless they say, we've been holding off on this investigation, helping you out with this Hunter Biden laptop stuff. We're going to stop helping you out.
Yeah, I think the choice is, if he's seeming like he's not going to go himself, are you going to make it even harder for him to win by saying this guy can't be president again, right? So, but what they're thinking is he's not going to go, he's not going to get out, so we're just wounding him further against this guy we hate and fear, Donald Trump. So let's not say it. But if they don't say it, he's not going, right? So that's the catch 22. That's a dilemma. I think they should say it. For the good of the country, Joe Biden needs to resign now. For the good of his party, he should resign now. Give Kamala Harris, I think, probably the only realistic alternative for them. I don't think she's great. Not sure she's going to be better than he is, but at least she's competent, right? She's 59 years old. She still has all her faculties. Let her be president. Let her get the good feeling that would come from that, and see if she can get it done. But it seems very unlikely Biden's going to do that.
All right, here we go. Trump against Biden. Trump's up by 6. Harris against Biden, the CNN. It is Trump by 2. Newsom against Trump. Trump by 5. Buttigieg versus Trump. Trump by 5. Whitmer versus Trump. Trump by 5. You believe Whitmer's formidable?
I think she's the best choice. I would not use the word formidable. But she's not, you know, Harris is going to have to defend everything Biden did, right? Because she was right there. Plus, she's horrible. And I'm not a Whitmer fan, but I think she has more talent than Kamala Harris. She's not saddled with Biden's weaknesses. And, you know, once an incumbent president steps down and there's sort of there's the implicit concession there that he's a failure, right? And on top of this, there'd be the implicit concession that they were lying to us, right? As Democrats are now saying. So I think whoever it is behind the eight ball. So I would go all the way and try something fresh. It's a little bit of a Hail Mary. She is from Michigan. She's above water in Michigan. I don't think Kamala Harris is going to do well in the blue wall state. So that'd be what I would do. But I think it's hard enough to get Biden out. And I think it'd be hard to get Harris out in addition to that. So you're probably stuck with Harris if he goes.
Well, if it is Harris, why would you take it? For example, it's in her best interest to hold on. Why? Because if Biden wins, she's really the president within 2 years, and she'd be doing everything. And now she's got to quickly bootstrap a campaign, get it together, hope people blacked out that she did nothing for 2.5 years. You're talking about 3 years of an empty schedule, an empty vessel. She loves talking about abortion like it's this great ride at Disney. You're going to love abortion. She's so over the top going to abortion clinics, talking about how fun it is. So she thinks she's got something there. Internationally, she's fallen on her face. Domestically, she's laughed at the assignment she gave us she was given at the border. She doesn't study. Her staff hates her. They all quit. She doesn't like Biden. Biden doesn't like her. Jill Biden doesn't like her. You know, I think she is the likely one to step in. But man, to think that she's going to be strong, she's got to totally change.
Well, the person who doesn't know any of that, or doesn't know, you know, 50 or 80% of it, is Kamala Harris, right? So she thinks he's great. So she gets this opportunity. I'm sure she believes Joe's been messing it up, underappreciates all her incredible strengths, and if she can just have a shot at it. I mean, that's every politician believes, right? That they a lot of them lack self-awareness. But yeah, this has been everything you say is another fact that's been propping Joe Biden up, right? Is Kamala Harris stronger? I think maybe she is marginally stronger than Biden at this point, because at least 75% of people aren't going to think she just isn't capable of doing the job as a physical and mental matter. So I think that's a step up over Biden. But everything you say is true. And obviously Trump would be favored against her.
And Rich, just looking ahead here, I'm looking at that trial in September now, the sentencing in September.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's a big relief to the Trump team, and who knows where this campaign's going to be by then. What do you think happens if they sentence in September? How do you think that affects? I mean, Trump's probably going to be up by 5 or 6 by then. Do you know that he's winning in New Mexico? He's winning in Nevada. He's tied in Minnesota. He's winning in New Hampshire. I mean, he's winning in all these places he was winning in 2016, won in 2016, and more. But having said that, how does that affect the sentencing? And I know you're not a lawyer, but with the immunity that just came, the immunity ruling that just came down from the Supreme Court.
I think that he is going to get sentenced, and it probably, you know, to some sort of confinement. And I think that the partisan pressure on Merchan, which I think he's been responsive to throughout, is going to be do something that's big that potentially could make an impact. So that's what I would expect. He's not going to jail. I mean, the guidelines say you can't go in jail prior to an appeal, first-time nonviolent offense like that. That would be just crazy. I think Merchan will try to make a splash. And I think, Brian, you know, the polling is incredible for Trump at the moment. I think he'll get some of it back probably. You know, we're at the height of the reaction over Joe Biden's failure. So a lot of people are just dug in no matter what. It doesn't matter what Joe Biden does. So I think that the lead will come back to earth a little bit, but he'll still be ahead, and he's just clearly favored. This debate was a way station to a second Trump term, and Trump got through it just fine, and Biden didn't.
George Stephanopoulos is going to sit down with the president on Friday. He's going to make a speech before that. He's got to give an award presentation. We know that. He's going to be in Wisconsin on Sunday. We know that. He's scheduled to speak at a teachers union event in Philadelphia. So he's trying to fill up his schedule to show he can do the job. Do you think Stephanopoulos goes for the jugular on Friday? Is there more pressure on him to ask a real question or more pressure on Biden to have real answers?
Well, pressure on both. I think there's pressure on Stephanopoulos, one, to push him. Two, the partisan incentive is to push him now, right? So I'm sure Stephanopoulos thinks the same thing everyone else does. And, you know, we've seen the media turn on Biden since the debate, and I think we'll see Stephanopoulos do the same. So I expect it to be a pretty tough interview. And the thing Biden has now, he's on a high wire every single event, right? Any freezing, any blanking, any incoherent mumbling potentially will increase the drum roll for him to get out. So this is another way the debate changed everything. Because, you know, he could freeze up at that fundraiser or freeze up at Juneteenth. No one noticed except for the right wing, you know, except the RNC Research Twitter account, which had tweeted out. And the New York Times was writing about how they're cheap fakes and they're dishonestly edited. And they're just normal
moments. I mean,
Bridge,
doesn't that anger you? I mean, doesn't that anger? A guy gets so angry just thinking about this.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I hate the term, it's so overused. It was complete gaslighting, right? They told us we were crazy. We were the liars when they were covering up this guy's obvious lack of capacity. And it's not, you know, he's not a governor. He's not a member of the House. He's president of the United States. And they covered this up. Hugely consequential.
Yeah, what bothers me most, too, is when you read some of these stories, the decisions he made. For example, when he got up and with Zelensky in front of him, he says, we've got you the money. We got you the money. The millions, the billions of dollars to rebuild your power grid. No, there were weapons. We're giving him the weapons. You see Zelensky's face. No one said anything. And then evidently, so he's on the phone with Prime Minister Netanyahu. They're trying to write as if he shows how lucid he is. And he's telling him, do not hit Iran back. If you do, you go alone. He says, Mr. President, we have to send a message. We have to hit back hard. He goes, then it's without us. That's even the lucid Joe Biden scares me as much as the as the age-ridden Joe Biden. Even listen to him yesterday. He's at a weather center talking about the hurricanes that are hitting. And, of course, he goes into climate change. Listen to this off prompter.
My administration will convene the first ever White House summer on extreme heat. We've invested billions to enhance our power grid, expand energy shortages, gradually easing new employees into heat environments, access to shade and water. You think we'd have to tell people access to shade and water. But be careful on hot pavement. I was telling the group who briefed me earlier. My brother has an expression, you got to know how to know.
What the hell is he talking about?
You know, I'm in a hotel room, and I have Morning Joe here in the background on mute, and they were the worst, right? So the article you referred to earlier that came out of the New York Times about how the European leaders were trying to protect Biden,
yes.
They knew how frail he was, that was much harsher than the Wall Street Journal article that came out about 2 or 3 weeks ago saying people in meetings don't say it's quite the same. You can't remember what's been agreed to. And Morning Joe just went thermonuclear on the Wall Street Journal for running this. It was not true. You know, it's all made up.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was absolutely accurate, and they were lying to us. And then they've turned around and flipped around and said Biden needs to go, right? So which is it? Admit you were lying to us and say he should go. But if you think he's so great in private, which they all say, why are you betraying the guy?
And it's a lot different. Like, some people looked at January 6th and said, hey, I can't get on the Trump train. I respect that, whatever. And they could do it. Mike Pence is one of them. I understand it. You know, Liz Cheney went off the charts, but it was an incident. Doesn't mean you didn't support him before, which he did, but she goes, that's it. But this is who he is. And now that it's discovered, he's like, yeah, I'm not with him. But we know you're with him. Rich, another reason to pick up the National Review to stay on top of things. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian. Happy 4th.
All right, same to you. When we come back, I take some of your calls, 1-866-408-7669. I know you have a lot to say.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm running for president, and I'm being accused of eating a dog. No, I would not believe any of those things. I am a very adventurous eater, Chris. I think you know about that about me. I'll eat virtually anything. There's two things I wouldn't eat. Well, three. I wouldn't eat a human. I wouldn't eat a monkey. And I wouldn't eat a dog.
Right. So your thoughts, guys, on this conversation. The three things I wouldn't eat.
I mean, there you have it.
Right.
Can't disagree with it.
Right. I mean, it's a good point. I mean, here we have a president that's falling apart in the Oval Office. You have a former president that's in the middle of three intriguing trials and just got another one pushed, mainly because of a Supreme Court ruling that many people would like to criticize. And he's like, I didn't eat a dog. I ate a goat. I'm not going to eat a monkey or a human. Okay. That's why you should be on the debate stage. And I can't get on the North Carolina ballot. Besides that, I'm the perfect choice. You know what he's doing? What they're doing is effective. They're making him a fringe candidate because he was starting to sound mainstream, kind of a blend on the vaccine, a blend of the extreme right when it comes to avoiding any type of action in Ukraine, a blend when it comes to helping the conservatives by saying, I want to build a wall at the border, but at the same time has his liberal bona fides as a candidate and a Democrat and a liberal. Like a Bill Maher type liberal that is liked by Joe Rogan.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. We have so much going on today, and so much will be breaking within the hour, I'm sure. I'll keep you up to date with it. This hour, we're going to be joined by Link Lauren, a political influencer who previously worked as a senior advisor on RFK Jr.'s presidential campaign. He is free-falling now after revelations just occurred in Vanity Fair doing, some damage control interviews where he's been ignored for a long time because he was making so many significant gains in the polls as a third-party candidate. Both parties look at him as a threat. And standing by, we're going to have Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, conducted and coordinated Task Force Pineapple, author of the book Operation Pineapple Express, concerned as you are about the terror threat here at home. He actually, him and his buddy, sacrificed their time, put their lives on the line for our benefit, and then watched it all melt away by President Biden's ill-fated decision to get out. We are all paying for that in ways you would not imagine. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Excuse me one second, Ambassador. How do you know that Joe Biden's not going to finish his term? What is that based on?
Why can't he come down here and assure us he's okay?
Did the president get examined by a doctor, or did he get a neurological scan?
Was he okay? What happened?
Now they care, right? Media now hitting a new low as they discover the White House is 100% dysfunctional and a president who works part-time and is only clear-headed some of that time. Like the Russia hoax. Remember when the media dropped the ball on that? They won awards for? They greased that story and now irresponsibly ignored the Biden story until this week.
Number two.
And I just think Kamala Harris would thrive in a debate with Donald Trump. She would be, I think, very well received in the industrial Midwest with working class voters. You know, I just say, what are we waiting for?
Yes. Los Angeles and Stanford grads who aren't really conversant on any topic would really thrive in a debate format and resonate with the Midwest. If he goes, who steps in? We look at the possible matchups and likelihoods as Gavin Newsom heads to the White House and Kamala Harris will have lunch at the White House to show Joe Biden they got his back. Well, kind of.
Number one.
Right now, I am for Joe Biden.
I just feel that it's time for him to step aside.
Joe Biden is our nominee.
Do you think he should drop out of the race?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that there are stronger options out there.
Really? That is it. Democrats weighing in. Operation Save Joe in full stride, but it might be too late. Drama everywhere as he fills his schedule. And there are signs that he's ready to go. And you know what he's doing? He's trying to put something on his schedule for the first time. I think the original plan was for him to go to Rehoboth and go sitting on a beach chair because he doesn't need to do anything. I'm not really sure. He's going to make remarks at a Medal of Honor ceremony this afternoon. He's going to have a lunch with the vice president. He's having an emergency meeting right now with his cabinet to find out, reassure them that he can still do it. He's going to meet with Democratic governors at the Roosevelt Room this afternoon. At one point tomorrow, Jen Psaki is going to be coming to Capitol, not tomorrow, maybe even today or Friday, I forgot. She's going to be coming to Capitol Hill to meet and go in front of congressional committees to find out what exactly the decision process was like in leaving Afghanistan. There are so many questions to answer, and there's so many people culpable to one of the biggest disasters in American history. There to clean up the mess while it was going on, Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, he formed Operation Pineapple, and his retired guys are still in touch with our intelligence operators on the ground in Afghanistan. Scott, what exactly did we leave behind, and what is happening now in Afghanistan?
Yeah, hey, Brian, good to talk to you, and thanks, as always, for giving a platform to the Global War on Terror veterans, you know, because we've got some important things to say. And, you know, I just had a conversation with the leader of the Afghan National Resistance Front, Massoud's son, Ahmed Massoud. And, you know, nobody's closer to what's going on in Afghanistan than that guy, who, by the way, no one from the Biden administration is talking to.
And just tell everyone who Massoud is. He was heading the Northern Alliance, working against the sitting government that was supported by Mullah Omar, that supported and protected Osama bin Laden.
So Massoud's father was the guy that was killed by bin Laden 2 days before 9/11 because bin Laden knew that's where we would go. And his dad had tried to warn the West about coming terror attacks. He was the only resistance force fighting al-Qaeda back before 9/11. And then they took him out. Well, fast forward 20 years, his son has now stepped into the reins of resisting against the Taliban, against al-Qaeda, and is speaking out loudly about the growing terror threat inside Afghanistan, saying that it is worse than pre-9/11 levels. For example, Hamza bin Laden, the son of Osama, all of the kids of these guys and our kids are now picking this mantle up. It's like the rise of the GWAT babies, you know. But he's saying that the son of Hamza bin Laden is very much alive. He is in Afghanistan. He is calling for fighters to come to Afghanistan and resume the battle and take it to the West and the United States. And that al-Qaeda and the Taliban are marrying into each other even more so than they did pre-9/11, which is always a massive indicator of an entrenched enemy.
So wait a second. The Taliban weren't supposed to do that. And if they did that, we would cut off any aid that might be going to them. Have we cut off any aid going to them, Scott?
No. In fact, it's continued at an alarming rate. You're looking at between $40 to $80 million every 10 days that goes to the Taliban in the form of either humanitarian aid or even as counterterrorism dollars, Brian. I mean, and that's something. I'm part of this group called Special Ops Association of America, and it's a bunch of retired special operators. And we put a letter out to both Trump and Biden saying, look, we are very concerned about this. I mean, the levels of funding, we could quite possibly be funding the next 9/11 with U.S. tax dollars.
Which is nuts, because I think the average person, you told me this 2 weeks ago, I didn't know we were sending any money to them because that was the big decision. Now that we left and a lot of these people are just starving because of the Taliban doesn't care about their people. They weren't even handing out the rations we were dropping into Kabul. Do we give aid? And all of a sudden, I realized that debate never happened and they're getting aid.
They're getting aid with no oversight. So what that means is, according to Massoud, 500 nonprofits, NGOs have been formed in Afghanistan, these like shadow nonprofits that are taking this money, and they're repurposing it into operationalized actions against the West. That the veteran community has even identified one of the operatives named Musa who is doing this. And then people say, well, how do you guys know this and not the agency and not these others? Well, because we're the guys that picked up the phone when Afghanistan fell and the government didn't. And these individuals are their commandos, their intel operatives. We trained them. They know what they're doing, and they don't feel comfortable talking to the government. So they're talking to the veterans they served with. And, you know, it's a scary picture.
Scott Mann with us now telling us what's happening in Afghanistan, how it relates to our border. Christopher Wray backed up exactly your worries. He's director of the FBI. Listen.
So as we pull out of Afghanistan, for example, you get less and less information about whether somebody from Afghanistan is actually a threat. And so some of the cases that I have seen that concern me are situations where somebody comes into the United States. It's not because there was a breakdown between CBP and the TSC. It's because they weren't watchlisted at the time. But in hindsight, they should have been watchlisted because information was later developed that says, uh-oh, this person is a problem.
So your thoughts.
Right. Well, first of all, where were these? You know, I love seeing these retired general officers and, you know, agency directors taking the microphone now talking about the threat warning. You know, I mean, we started engaging the Taliban 3 years ago. We've spent over $2 billion, you know, in funds going to the Taliban. And, you know, when you talk about the border, Brian, the Minister of Interior in Afghanistan is a guy named Haqqani. Haqqani was one of those most wanted men in Afghanistan. He is known as the father of suicide bombing. This guy has a $10 million bounty on his head by the FBI. He is the one issuing the passports. He is the one who issues travel documents to anybody leaving Afghanistan. And what I've heard from members of the resistance is that the biometrics that we left behind that documented all of these different people, they're actually using the biometrics we left behind to check their operatives to make sure they don't pop on a biometric list before they send them across.
That is absolutely insane that we left the way we did, to leave valuable things the way we did, to leave weaponry the way we did, into an area who's impoverished but will do anything for this weaponry. What's happened to our stuff that we left there, let alone the biometrics?
I was getting input from the resistance last summer, about this time last summer, that shipments of weapons were inbound for, wait for it, Gaza. There was no action taken on this at all. There was movement of this equipment well before the October 7 attacks, and there is continued reporting that not only did the weapons from Afghanistan make their way into Gaza for the October 7 attacks, but many of the fighters were actually trained in close quarters battle in Afghanistan at these camps that were former Army bases. Now, here's the thing that I really want people to hear as we roll into this Independence Day. I'm not about scaring folks, but what we need to pay attention to is the way that the attacks of October 7 went down, the way the attacks in Russia went down. This was close, up close, interpersonal violence where we live, work, and play. It was not the two Twin Towers. It was not the Pentagon, icons of power. It was getting into our communities where we live, work, and play. This is a new tactic, technique, and procedure of terror groups, and I am very, very confident that this is the type of migration of tactic we're going to see in the U.S., and a lot of veterans are saying the same thing.
And then they're going to call you into action again. You have to be called into action to help out in Afghanistan. Not a thank you. A lot of the stuff was financed by your own dollars. Then they pull out, give up on all intelligence operatives. You don't. You still have connections. They use you to help out when they need them in Africa. They want to know if you get your operation to evacuate embassies. And now we find out we're at a crisis point in Terra Haven in the country you left behind. Can you imagine if you just explained to the American people that we're that Afghanistan is located between China, Pakistan, and Russia? And and just so people, it's strategically located. We're giving these people 20 years to have a degree of freedom and women an actually chance to earn a degree. And at the same time, say the intelligence that we get keeps your neighborhood safe. If you explained that to the American people who now knew the reality since 9/11, there would have been no clamor to get out. In fact, there was very little clamor to get out, Scott Mann.
No, exactly. And we could have remained responsibly. And because, you know, when 9/11 happened, Brian, our generation of warfighters said never again. That will not happen on our watch, because we knew that the reason it happened was we did not have actionable intelligence on the ground that was worthwhile. And we did not have a partner force that could stand between Al-Qaeda and our homeland. So we spent 20 years, our entire adult life, our buddies, we lost building an intelligence capability and a partner force that could act responsibly. And on August 15th, we walked away from it. We left 98% of our intel capability behind. And now the only viable high-fidelity intelligence reporting that's coming in is from the very commandos we abandoned, talking to the veterans that fought along beside them. And nobody's listening. You know, what I would love your help on is, I think, you know, we need to get Ahmed Massoud to the United States. He's been blacklisted by this administration. He needs to go on the Hill and testify to Congress. We need to hear what this guy
That'd
has to say. His father tried before he was killed. He went to Paris and tried to warn us, and we didn't listen. And look what happened. And this young man is doing the same thing, and the GWAT veterans are at his shoulder. And somebody needs to listen to us before it's too late.
Well, I mean, the Jim Jordans of the world will definitely bring you in. Jim Comer would definitely understand it. And Michael McCall fears it. Listen to what he said on Sunday. Cut 36.
They are detained and released into our society. These are 8 known ISIS affiliates. Into the United States, the FBI, thank God, catches this thing. And now they have been detained. But they were in New York, Philadelphia, and L.A. When I chaired Homeland, this is my worst nightmare. My worst fear is to have the southern border exploited, terrorists getting into the country. We never saw that. We saw known and suspected terrorists detained but never get in. These individuals got in, and they were not here on a goodwill mission. They were here to do us harm.
So he sees this. We got eight ISIS guys that were already here. We have let 400 Tajiks into our country, even though they are flagged as a terror nation. We're just absolutely giving up on being responsible at the border, or this administration is. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing that we need to do is we really do need to listen to what the GWAT veterans are saying and the resistance. Look, the first thing is stop giving money to the Taliban. It would not surprise me if before this term of the Biden administration ends that our country has recognized, along with the UN, the Taliban as a legitimate government in the world, which would be a nightmare. So we need to stop giving money to the Taliban, first of all. And the resistance has said, if you'll stop doing that, we'll defeat them. They're not that strong. We can defeat them. They don't want U.S. boots on the ground. Just stop giving money to the Taliban. That alone, Brian, could be a game-changing thing. But as far as what McCall was talking about, these operatives that are already here, what the resistance has told me is that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda learned a lesson, a valuable lesson from 9/11. They're not going to put their face on the next attack. ISIS will be their surrogate. ISIS is young. They haven't.
Even though they hate Al-Qaeda? Even though they don't?
Not, I don't think that's what the resistance and a lot of the folks on the inside are saying is that's what they portray to the public, but they are two sides of the same coin.
Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann will do that. Push to bring Massoud here to tell a story and let everybody be aware that we're giving millions of dollars to the Taliban. That is sickening. Colonel, thank you so much. Have a special 4th of July. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The real issue is he telling the truth about whether he can serve a full 4 years? And there's a lot of challenges in the world. We want a president who could be incapacitated? This is one of those where you got to say to yourself, this is hard. There's no doubt. There's risk no matter what you do here. But you got to say to yourself, what's in the best interest of the country, not the party? What's in the best interest of the country in the next 4 years?
Well, the Chuck Todd, that would be fine if you brought this up in 2022 when he says he's running again. And you said, you know, I can see he's declining. We all see he's declining. You know, I got to give up Meet the Press, but I'm also a commentator. I'm a writer. I can start commenting on people, interviewing people that see the debilitating condition of the president. You could bring on a doctor that was a politician and say, I think Hagerty was a doctor and a senator. Say, do you see a deterioration in the president? Do you see him not as sharp as he was? Or bring people on that serve with him for a long time and just say, you know, when people are worried about the president's condition, is there a right to be concerned? But now you're doing it after a debate. You're not doing it after the wandering off stage. You're not watching him refuse to do a press conference. I'll go back. One of the main reasons I didn't want to go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner is it's insulting. This guy ignores all of our interview requests. He doesn't do anything with our, you know, KJP does, but he doesn't really answer any of the questions of our reporters down there, and he never does any press events. So why would I go and party with him and take gentle barbs from him? It's a joke.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We've got a few minutes now to stop down, keep up with what's going on in the news. Just kind of amazing. I'm watching MSNBC. You know what's going on with President Biden. You know about the meetings with the Democratic governors. You know he had an emergency meeting with his cabinet this morning. You know that he's got an appearance a little bit later that he's got to impress by. You know he's got a George Stephanopoulos news. He's going to do a sit-down with him on Friday. Do you know what MSNBC is doing? Stormy Daniels. It was time to control. The goal was to get take the power away from Donald Trump. Well, that's not working. And believe it or not, Stormy Daniels does not belong in your rundown. I'm not going to program your channel, but if you care about the people and the viewers, nobody cares about Stormy Daniels. That thing, the sentencing, the trial is done. The sentencing is postponed. Should not be in your lineup unless you're so concerned that Donald Trump is not on the tip of your tongue and then you're focused more on the Democratic Party. With me right now is Link Loren, a political influencer who previously worked as senior advisor for RFK Jr. and always commenting on everything to do with breaking news as it relates to politics. Link, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Great to be here.
First off, to your thoughts about the Bidens. In particular, over the last week, we saw that Joe Biden won behind closed doors. We also saw the power of Jill. We saw the power of Jill after the debate, right, bringing him to the Waffle House, right, even though he had a cold. We know she was introducing him in North Carolina the next day. And then we see him on the cover of Vogue, and it was contrasted by the New York Post, who wrote Vague,
right,
and put Joe Biden's picture on it. What's her role in that family in this White House?
It seems like the mainstream media and the Democratic elite are almost propping up Jill Biden to be the next president effectively. I mean, the way she leads Joe around, she grabs him by the arm. The way she talks to him, it's like a dog playing fetch in this patronizing tone. Jill's like, you did so good, Joe. You answered all the questions. You did so amazing. I mean, they're propping Jill up to basically be the president. And then you see them going to Waffle House, like you said, shaking hands, kissing babies. But an hour before, they said, oh, he's doing so poorly in the debate because he has a cold. If all it takes is a cold to take out the president of the United States, you're probably not up to the job to begin with.
How about the fact that the next day he sounded fine, no raspiness in North Carolina, reading the prompter? That's a huge problem with accuracy.
1,000%. They also said, oh, well, he just didn't have enough time to prepare. And then Hunter Biden's now one of his top advisors. If Hunter Biden is your top advisor, this is a guy who slept with his deceased brother's wife, got her hooked on crack cocaine, threw a gun in a dumpster, has a daughter he's never met in Arkansas. This is your top advisor. Now it all makes sense why Joe Biden is failing so miserably. So I don't know what they're going to do, if they're going to put Kamala in. I think maybe what he's going to have to do is just go to the convention and say, I'm going to serve out this term, and then they can have an actual convention. I have no clue what's going to happen.
Well, I don't know if she's going to give up power easily. They'll disappear forever after this. They're done.
Right.
You know,
it's
not like they have an heir apparent, the Bidens.
Right.
And for Kamala Harris, nobody I know thinks she's ready. The way she polls is below Joe's. Mm. She doesn't put the work in, doesn't study.
Right.
Nothing's ever on her agenda,
right,
except for abortion. She loves abortion. Mm-hmm. She wishes everyone could have one. Evidently, mm-hmm, it's the time of your life,
right,
to have an abortion. She's gone so over the top going to abortion clinics. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a lunch today. On the subplot underneath that, RFK is back in the news for reasons,
right,
he wouldn't want to be. Vanity,
right,
Fair doing a lot of digging, finding out things on him.
Yes.
Here's he, Eric. Can we roll the RFK where he talks about what exactly he's eating?
I'm running for president, and that I'm being accused of eating a dog. No, I would not believe any of those things. I am a very adventurous eater, Chris. I think you know about that about me. I'll eat virtually anything. There's two things I wouldn't eat. Well, three. I wouldn't eat a human. I wouldn't eat a monkey. And I wouldn't eat a dog.
So that's good to know. Did you know that when you were working with him?
I did not know that about him when I worked with him. But, I mean, this is a guy who walks around barefoot on planes. He picks up rattlesnakes with his bare hands. So he's probably an adventurous eater. I don't see him eating a dog, to be completely honest. I've never seen Bobby eat a dog. I think that was a really interesting Vanity Fair hit piece. But it's never a good sign, and I say this as a friend. I love him. It's never a good sign when you're a few months out to the election and having to answer, no, it wasn't a dog carcass. It was a goat carcass. I don't think now is the best time for that.
And also allegations about a past relationship, not denying any.
Right. Yeah, no, I used to be in all those meetings, and so I wish them well. I can imagine sort of what's going on in those Zoom calls and conference calls, but it's sort of their mess to mind their way out of. And it doesn't give me any pleasure to see, because when I was on the campaign, there was a point where we were polling at 24% on average in the battleground states. And now in that same New York Times CNN poll last month, it was down to 10%. So I don't know if it's these hit pieces. I think also as we move closer to the election, people are just coming down to say, look, it's going to be Trump or Biden or whoever the Democrat nominee is. And so people are kind of finding their ways to the two major parties.
You know, his uncle, Ted, wanted to run against Jimmy Carter. And guess what? He did. He was allowed to because those were the rules.
Right.
Now the party doesn't want that. They want to pick their person, Hillary, over Sanders. They want to pick their person, Biden, for pushed up by Clyburn, pushing down Bernie. And then in turn, you have no competition. So when the bottom falls out of Joe Biden, there's no even number two. There's no John Edwards. There's no Gary Hart.
Right. I mean,
there's no Bob, you know, Pat Buchanan.
I remember saying this back in 2019 and then at the beginning of 2020. Why is the Democratic Party not rearing new talent in the party? Why are you guys pushing forth Joe Biden in 2020? They should have found a young transformational leader. That's what the Democratic Party's always done. They had Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, JFK. They succeed putting forth young transformational leaders. Joe Biden was the first time they ever did an about face. And they have some guy who's been around for five decades with no hallmark accomplishments.
So when you say an influencer, how would you characterize yourself?
So I'm just pretty much a political commentator. I started making videos last year on TikTok, built up a big audience, and then that's when campaigns started reaching out. So I'm basically just known for common sense, calling it like I see it, being a voice of reason among Gen Z, which is not common these days among Gen Z. So I really wear that mantle, and that's what I do.
And what do you comment? What is your thoughts today? Do you think Joe Biden survives the week? Do you think he survives the month?
So I have this sort of fantasy prediction that on the July 5th George Stephanopoulos interview, Joe Biden is going to announce he's stepping down and passing the baton to someone else or not seeking reelection. I think that could happen on July 5th with George Stephanopoulos. Or the Democratic Party is known for being quite delusional and out of touch. They used to be the party of blue-collar, working-class Americans, and now, you know, they're on the cover of Vogue in $5,000 outfits. So I could see them also being delusional enough to soldier on with Joe Biden. Who's to say?
Right. I don't think there's any way he does that. I think he's there to battle it out with Stephanopoulos. The word is, if Stephanopoulos, if the party bosses want Stephanopoulos to go for it, they're going to go for the jugular against him.
Right.
Right? And point out, you know, XY said you froze in at the Four Seasons in front of donors. It's literally rigor mortis.
Right.
And they had to sit you down. And this happened 15 to 20 times in the last 6 months, as reported by Carl Bernstein, not a right-wing firebrand.
Well, I'm glad you said this. I really felt watching the debate, and since then, Joe Biden was the sacrificial lamb that night. I really do believe they sent him out on stage so there would be no question that they would have to remove him from the ticket. I think they sent him out so everyone could see what's been going on behind the scenes. Because if you go watch Rachel Maddow, MSNBC, they will gaslight you into saying, oh, Joe Biden's so sharp and he's so quick and he's doing cartwheels and backflips behind the scenes. Well, you know what, Brian? We haven't seen any of that. And it's time to come down to the wire and show us. So I don't know what they're going to do with Joe Biden. I don't know if he's going to step aside. They keep saying he needs to watch out for his legacy. I don't know what legacy Joe Biden has. I can't think of really any accomplishments that he has. So, well,
yeah, I mean, there's a few things, white men. They're going to say the infrastructure deal. They're going to say the Inflation Reduction
Act, which didn't reduce inflation.
And they're going to say the rescue package, which we didn't need. And all economists, including Larry Summers, said helped fuel inflation more than anything else. They're going to say the bipartisan legislation, I believe, on the CHIPS bill. So, but the CHIPS bill has got filled up with so much DEI, they can't get a company to green light it to be able to staff it. along with the money that they're presenting. So the chips are not coming back yet. And in terms of the electric cars and greening of the economy, only 8 terminals have been built. But yet all that money's been earmarked.
Right, 1,000%. I mean, Joe Biden is just spending our money recklessly. This is really taxation without representation. He thinks the American people are his just personal bank. He sends hundreds of billions of dollars over to Zelensky in Ukraine. We have kids in this country who can't read, write, go to sleep hungry, and don't have clean water. So Joe Biden certainly doesn't meet the moment, but I don't think Kamala Harris does either.
Right. What's your view on Trump?
It's looking like Trump could win. I mean, I've always said Trump is the modern day rock star. There's a reason Trump is gaining with Gen Z, my generation, gaining with black people, gaining with Hispanic people, because he's actually speaking to their needs. You even look at the debate. Joe Biden goes on stage. He wants to virtue signal and talk about all these woke topics. They give him a layup question about Roe v. Wade. He fumbles that. Donald Trump's really the only one on stage now talking about what people care about, which is how are we going to put food on the table? The number one issue for my generation in every poll is, how am I going to afford a home and have equity in an asset like that? Donald Trump is speaking to their needs. So I see a lot of young people giving Donald Trump a second look before November.
It's going to be interesting, too, because he's laying out. Mm-hmm. And that's a tactic he never did before.
Never. Ever. Never, ever.
You'd be like jealous right. that we weren't talking about him.
Right. No, I think Donald Trump is letting them flounder and crash and burn. And there's a Vanity Fair piece a few months ago that said Donald Trump's campaign this time in 2024 was terrifyingly competent. And knowing some of the people on that campaign and just having sources in there and watching from the outside, I do think Donald Trump has incredible people around him this time, is making really great moves.
So I got a chance to meet Doug Burgum on Monday. I was in, I know you're jealous, on Sunday in North Dakota. and had a chance to interview him on Monday again. And knew Doug, he's probably been in the studio 4 times and he's been all over the channel. He's probably odds on favorite to be number 2. And the one thing about Trump that doesn't even come up, so you would think that a consultant would tell you, you don't want 2 white guys on the ticket.
Right.
That's 2024. He has no, he could not care less.
Right.
It could be Stefanik if he thought Stefanik was better. Oh, they'll say, you're picking a woman. He's
right.
Like, oh, I didn't even notice. Like, he's just looking for the best person.
No,
I think America wants to pick the best person now.
America doesn't care black, white, male, female. They want the most competent person. We have an immigration crisis, housing crisis. We've got foreign conflict in Ukraine, in the Middle East. We don't have time to spare. So I don't give a rat's ass if, what the person looks like. I want the best person for the job. Doug Burgum is at the top of my list. I've been a Doug Burgum fan since I met him in August in Milwaukee at the first debate. He had just injured himself. He couldn't have been nicer. I think Doug Burgum would be great. I think what Trump did really well in 16 was choose a guy like Mike Pence, who was seen as very stable, a little boring, a little milquetoast, but was a counterbalance to more of Donald Trump's bombastic. Yeah, he was like Donald Trump was this bombastic guy, New York Post guy from The Apprentice. I think Doug Burgum would be a genius choice, and I think it'd look like a really strong, masculine, smart businessman ticket.
So let's look at what's been glazed over in the New York Times today. In the New York Times, they did, I think it's a 16-page story, you know, reading online, who knows, but it just went on forever. Maggie Haberman and Peter Baker, who are they probably the most well-known U.S. writers who write for the New York Times. How did you put together a 16-page story in 2 days about how all the frailties and faux pas of of Joe Biden that aren't seen on video? These are sources behind the scenes.
Right.
I mean, they talk about ambassadors behind the scenes seeing how frail he is. They talked about a 98-year-old World War II vet who looked at Joe Biden and said, hey, you know what? He looked like the same guy I watch on television. They asked, who is that? Somebody who's very frail and out of touch.
Right.
Unable to. This is a 98. So we had all these anecdotes lined up. How could you go to your job every day and not write the stories that matter most for the people that hired you to do it?
No, I really think these are just political operatives posing as journalists and pundits. They're basically an extension of the Democratic elite of the mainstream media. That's what we're seeing all the time. I mean, they pretty much just lied to the American people for years and said Joe Biden was quick and sharp. I mean, I remember Alejandro Mayorkas going on TV and saying the hardest part about a meeting with Joe Biden is he's going to ask you probing questions and you can't be more prepared for Joe Biden. Where is that? Where is that Joe Biden? Because we have yet to see it. Joe Biden was never known for being intelligent. I think he was in the bottom 5% of his class, or really near the bottom of his class.
He told us he was at
school.
The top.
Yeah, he was in the top. Well, we all fib a little bit on our resumes. But I don't think Joe Biden's ever been the sharpest tool in the shed. And with dementia, Alzheimer's, some are saying Parkinson's, it might be time to throw in the towel. And the great irony here is, Brian, He talks all the time, Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. I'm running to protect democracy. And all their polling, it's, we got to save democracy. If you cared about democracy, why would you have a brain-dead guy with the nuclear codes in the Situation Room?
Well, put it this way. You just made me switch sound bites now. I want to go to Nikki Haley.
Okay.
Who called him out to say the same exact thing.
Okay.
Eric, roll this. This was on with George Stephanopoulos, Nikki Haley, who made this statement. And listen to the pushback that she got just a couple of months ago.
The Republican nominee likely to be running against not Kamala Harris, but Joe Biden. Why would it be better to vote for a convicted felon than President Joe Biden?
Well, you're assuming that he's convicted, and you're assuming he's going to be the nominee,
no,
George.
You
and
were
I
asked a question that was
this.
Based on that assumption, and you said you would vote for him.
Well, first of all, a vote for Joe Biden is a vote for Kamala Harris. You know that, and I know that. There is no way that Joe Biden's going to finish his term. I think Kamala Harris is going to be the next president, and that should send a chill up every American spine. But I also think the fact that we have a primary.
Excuse me, one second, Ambassador. How do you know that Joe Biden's not going to finish his term? What is that based on?
Ask Americans, do you think he's going to finish his term? Do you think that he's actually going to finish what he started? We look at the decline he's had over the last few years. You have to be honest with the American people, George. There's no way that Joe Biden's going to finish out a next term. We can't have an 81-year-old president.
That's the exasperation that most people feel, except for anyone watching MSNBC and CNN.
Right. I mean, it's just this cultural gaslighting that's gone on for years. That interview you just played reminded me of Casey Hunt and Caroline Leavitt. I mean, whenever you try to challenge the liberal mainstream media agenda, they will shut you down, cut you off, cut to a different segment as quickly as possible because these are inconvenient truths.
Right. But now they all agree. Well, now they're doing probing. Now they want to see a doctor's, doctor's report.
Exactly. Within a week, the New York Times has done an about face. I think there now is this push. We've got to get Joe Biden out. I mean, once you lose MSNBC, it's pretty bad for Joe Biden.
It's almost impossible to do that if you're Joe Biden, but he's done the impossible.
When you lose Morning Joe, your career might be over, Joe Biden.
Right. Or in our case, it would be made. Link Lauren, thanks so much. Great to see you. If people want to follow you, where do they go?
You can just follow me at It's Link Lauren everywhere. Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
No problem. I'll see you soon.
See you.
Back in a moment with your calls. Don't move.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
President Biden, who I've been around numerous times just in this last year, is sharp. He's focused.
He is sharp, intensely probing, and detail-oriented and focused.
This is a man who is sharp, who is on top of his game.
He's smart. He's on his game.
I was in almost every meeting with the president, and the president was in front of and on top of it all.
Did anyone film that? If you're telling us behind the scenes he is sharp and full of energy and on top of it and really in control and leading, you should film that. That would be good to show to people instead of a TikTok where he goes,
And that, just like with COVID, I thought that was so funny. Jon Stewart goes back on Monday nights and does a few extra shots, but for the most part goes back at the Daily Show and just pointed out what we've been pointing out. Now, he still beats on Trump more than Biden, but he'll at least pointing it out. Stephen Colbert will not even point it out. Jimmy Kimmel will flat out ignore it. Howard Stern won't bring it up. Howard Stern kissed his ass for over an hour. Talk about how nervous he was. He tried to compliment him, and Joe Biden wasn't even picking up on it. It was almost impossible to listen to. But, you know, Howard Stern could be nice to people and actually bring the best out in people, but he doesn't do that anymore because I think he doesn't want to get upset Jimmy Kimmel. But Jon Stewart will go after, almost not like Bill Maher will, because Bill Maher, I think, is more concerned about Donald Trump coming back than Jon Stewart is, maybe. And not as left as Jon Stewart at the same time, if those two statements can live together. But fascinating. Hey, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out how to see me in Stroudsburg, July 27th. Beautiful theater there. History, Liberty, and Laughs. And don't forget, you got history tomorrow, 4th of July. Happy birthday, America. But thanks for keeping it here on July 3rd.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. But thankfully, we're heard about more and more stations across the country now carried in Hawaii, Hartford, Richmond, Dallas. Those are the four stations we added over the last few weeks, and we're thrilled to do it because you're coming on at a great time. We have Tyrus coming on this, and he'll be on for the whole half hour. But I just want to give you this news immediately. You know the number one story is President Biden, and can he continue on? This crossed 3 minutes ago. President Biden has told a key ally that he knows he may not be able to salvage his candidacy if he cannot convince the public in the coming days he is up for the job after the disastrous debate. The president, who the ally emphasizes is still deeply in the fight for reelection, understands that his next few appearances heading into the holiday, including his interview with Stephanopoulos and campaign stops in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, must go well. Quote, he knows if he has two more events like this, we're in a different place right now. After the article published, Andrew Bates, the White House spokesperson, said, quote, absolutely false, close quote. The conversation's first indication to become public that the president is seriously considering whether he can recover or not. Of course, at least that shows he's sober and understands a little bit what's going on. Of course it is. As bad as the debate was, that's not the story. You know what it was? His team didn't think legislators, congressional leaders, Democratic donors should be briefed about where he is, what happened, what they could say to other people, why they should write additional checks, how they should handle their own races, how it would be affected, a chance to air their grievances. And if you don't want to hear directly from the president, you get Jeff Zients on to do it. So in those days, they thought they'd go about business as usual. And the Washington Post writes, so for 3 or 4 days, they just went about it. They had an appearance. He goes to North Carolina, reads a speech off a teleprompter, and says, ho-hum, no big deal. Well, the Democratic governors were upset. And Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota, his biggest advocate and big-time surrogate, got all of them together. So let's have a meeting. And today, they're meeting again. This morning, they had an emergency cabinet meeting session. So to reassure, I guess, the guys he hired, or get a way forward, and how you're going to deal with interviews and questions, because it's not that he was bad. Barack Obama was bad on his first debate. George W. Bush was bad against John Kerry. This was absolutely terrible because he couldn't think. It didn't make any sense. And then listen to this yesterday. So he goes out to a weather center to talk about the hurricanes, and then, of course, talks about global warming. If you don't believe in global warming, you're an idiot. So listen to some of this exchange. Tell me if this makes you feel better.
My administration will convene the first ever White House summer on extreme heat. We've invested billions to enhance our power grid, expand energy shortages, gradually easing new employees into heat environments, access to shade and water. You think we'd have to tell people access to shade and water. But be careful on hot pavement. I was telling the group who briefed me earlier. My brother has an expression, you got to know how to know.
Okay. And would it feel better? So in the beginning, he's reading it. And then he says, we have to get for shade and water. I never really heard of that combination. Shade and water. We're going to, together, as a nation, we will provide shade to all Americans. I think that rolls right off the tongue. I'm here to raise money for shade. For those of you who don't live near a tree or in a tree, we will provide shade for you. If you can't afford shade, we'll provide it for you. We're talking about awnings. We'll raise money for awnings for kids who need awnings. And then he segues into whatever's on his mind, and that is pavement. You don't want to walk on hot pavement. So thank you. Feel a lot better now. After the debate, again, I don't want to lean too much on Jon Stewart, who I know probably doesn't listen to the show or the network, but I appreciate his humor. He said this.
If there aren't actually performance-enhancing drugs for these candidates, I could sure use some recreational ones right now because this cannot be real life. It just can't. We're America. God.
Listen, don't include Trump in that. Trump did fine. I mean, he missed some wide open chances, but that's fine. You know, I'm not sitting up there in front of 70 million people with a guy you don't know where he's going. And one of the things I think was Trump found disconcerting. He brought up, hey, a whole bunch of guys got bombed over there, and you said nothing happened. And I think he was referring to the fact that after they killed Soleimani, they bombed a base, and they missed everything, but the explosion caused some TBI in some of the soldiers. All right. Way to go, Joe. Thanks for bringing up something that has nothing to do with who Donald Trump would be as a president. He's going to hit Iran again, and he's going to kill more of those guys, just like Israel did. Killed the leading Iranian official who was out to kill other people. So that was, maybe Trump was concentrating so much, but I thought Trump did really well. Trump is on a roll. I mean, think about this. When it comes to the, since the court case, he was convicted on all the charges. Most of the public sentiment is it never should have been a case. Former Governor Cuomo came out and said, yeah, this should never have been a case. I never would have brought it. I'm a Democrat. The only reason he was brought to trial was because his last name was Trump. And then it turns out he gets, after they hit him with a civil trial, he gets the money to hold on to his businesses. Next, he goes in, gets convicted, and raises millions of dollars to the point where he has now outraised last quarter. He outraised the Biden camp, which I didn't think was even possible. So we outraised the Biden camp significantly in money raised. And then he goes and gets the Supreme Court favorable judgment when it comes to immunity, which we all know presidents need partial immunity. That's what cops get. I think the president should get if it's something to do with his job. You can't sue him because he built a wall or didn't build a wall. You can't sue him because he went into Iraq or didn't go into Iraq and somebody might have gotten hurt. So, but you can't have total immunity. So because of that, the New York case gets postponed because they got to reconsider this case with these new rules. It's going to be postponed for sentencing until September. Jack Smith's both cases go to a lower court. It's going to take forever to disseminate. That means those cases are postponed. And maybe President Trump can try to be president for the next 3 months, can schedule to go to the RNC. The guy is on a roll. Now, take a look at what Joe Biden's going through right now. He's got his whole party turning on him. Not only are they turning on him, some are for him, some are against him. Here's what matters. Nancy Pelosi, James Clyburn, Barack Obama. Barack Obama admits there is a somewhat of a problem. Now, there are questions whether he's going to go out of his way to save Joe. We know the person who wants him out, Lloyd Dockett, just a nondescript Democratic congressman from Texas. But Barack Obama says he shares concerns after the disastrous debate. He's telling allies that Biden's path to the presidency will be more challenging. The Washington Post expands on it. He has privately told allies who have reached out to him that President Biden's already tough path gets harder. A harsher assessment of the presidential race than his public comments, evidently behind closed doors. James Clyburn also. So listen to the swath of people. Cut to.
Right now, I am for Joe Biden. I'm going to tell him what I really feel, but I will tell you this. I'm going to tell you what it's not, and it's not to say to him, get out of the race.
This is not about one night. This has been a problem for a year. I salute President Biden. I just feel that it's time for him to step aside.
Joe Biden is our nominee. Joe Biden is our leader. I will proudly be supporting the president.
Do you think he should drop out of the race?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that there are stronger options out there for Democrats. We have a stable of folks that I think could do a better job.
I think that, again, he's our nominee. And so unless he makes a different decision, I'm on board and I'm supporting the president. Again, he's been good for the country.
That's Governor Pritzker, who's terrible for Illinois. He'll be an awful president. Obviously, he's got discipline issues. Also, Pritzker is probably at the White House today because it's an opportunity to go there, maybe measure the drapes. Number two, also a chance to get in front of Joe Biden, maybe assess for himself because they have to worry about themselves. Now, Pritzker doesn't. I think he's term limited out. But I'm a congressman in a battleground state in purple district. I'm doing what Tammy Baldwin did. President Biden is going to Wisconsin, to Tammy Baldwin's hometown. She's running for Senate again. She's not even showing up to be seen with him. How embarrassing is that? Stacey Abrams not showing up in Georgia, I thought was bad in 2022, and she lost her election because she said she had scheduling conflicts. So this is where we're at right now. Democrats are jumping ship, but in terms of analysis and where we go, I thought that Mark Thiessen was really on his game. For those of you who think that he's going to back out and they have a great replacement waiting in the wings, forget it. Here's Mark Thiessen, cut 24.
I mean, put aside, if they could get past the Kamala Harris problem, why is Joe Biden president right now? Because there was no other alternative in 2020. Everybody else failed. And Bernie Sanders was heading towards the nomination. And so they all panicked and said, OK, let's put old moderate genial Joe Biden on the ticket and he'll be our Trojan horse to get into the White House. There's no better field right now.
And if I thought I had a legitimate shot of being president, I'm a senator, governor doing well. I'm not jumping in now. Are you kidding? Because you jump in now, you don't even know what kind of money you're going to get. You got no name recognition unless you're Bernie Sanders. Then you go do it, you ramp up, and you take it on Donald Trump, a buzzsaw. Donald Trump is beating everybody head-to-head. The closest is, believe it or not, Kamala Harris, but at most she's trailing by 5 or 7. So in a CNN poll, here you go. Do you think Democrats have a better chance of winning the presidency in 2024 if Joe Biden is the party nominee? 24% said yes. Better chance with somebody else? 75%. Also, Trump leading Biden by 6 points as Biden's favorability rating falls to 34%. Biden to Trump head-to-head, Trump by 6. He has never been this strong. Favorable, unfavorable opinion of President Biden? Favorable, 34%. That is terrible. He was asked about his performance, why he was so bad. He said he was so tired, he needed 2 days off before he could actually start debate prep. And this is a fact. When debate prep started, he needed a nap in the afternoon and wouldn't start before 10 o'clock. Mistakes. Remember, over just the last 3 weeks, he forgot the name of his HHS secretary, Mayorkas, the worst, by the way. He misstated the purpose of weapons to Ukraine. He said it was to reassemble the electric grid. No, it was to give them weapons to kill Russians. Also, on Juneteenth, he froze. He got confused at different points during the D-Day celebration. He walked off the ramp with Macron before shaking anybody's hand. He also had a little problem at D-Day because when they were playing taps, he got up and started walking around. President Meloni of Italy, who hosted the G7, was reportedly acutely sensitive to his condition and was discussing Joe privately. Privately with other leaders among themselves and had an eye on him the whole time. And we saw that. Also a reminder, his policies are terrible. In Israel, they get hit rocket attack after rocket attack, 300 from Iran. Time to hit back? Well, the prime minister said they have to hit back, Mr. President, because they have to deter the next attack. He said, if you go alone. So ultimately, Netanyahu decided not to go it alone and have a limited attack. That type of thing is Joe Biden sober and clear-minded. That's why I didn't vote for Joe Biden. Because I hate his policies, hate what he does to our allies, and just ignores our enemies. And remember, Robert Hur was the one who says he basically was infirmed. But no one, everyone attacked the guy who did the investigation, not the person he investigated. When we come back, I'll take your calls. I see up there, 1-866-408-7669. I welcome in Tyrus at the bottom of the hour. He was fired up last night on Gutfeld. Thanks, everyone, for watching last night with Laura. I'm sure we got huge ratings. And not because of me. It's because so much breaking news, and Laura's got a great audience. All right, don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. The report just came out at 10:58 Eastern time that Biden is assessing the fact that it's going to be tough for him to keep on if he has to keep on with his campaign, if he has any more outings like the debate that took place. And he's got a lot of appearances. He doesn't do many appearances, and he wanted to take, I think, the whole week off again. I don't even know why he wants the job. He doesn't want to do the job. So here's a report. President Biden has told key allies that he knows he may not be able to salvage his candidacy if he cannot convince the public in the coming days that he's up for the job. He knows that if he has two more events like the ones he had, we're in a different place. So his campaign manager was on CNN, Quinton Fulks, the principal deputy campaign manager. Here's how he responded to that report.
Look, that is false. There are a number of rumors floating out there. The president is in this race to win it. He is the Democratic nominee. And from our perspective, we're going to continue to do everything we can to make sure that we're building a campaign apparatus to reach voters.
So when you say that's false, the president has had zero conversations with anyone saying, I may not be able to continue. I may not be able to win this race.
That is correct. The president has been having conversations with a number of Democratic leaders. I'm talking to them. I think, obviously, the president, in his own words, acknowledged a poor debate performance. But at the same time, I think what we're sensing from people is a sense of urgency and fear from Donald Trump. And I think that the conversations that the president has been having with Democrats across the country is one to reassure them that he is in this race.
Yeah, and I don't think you could possibly quantify. I'm very curious to this. This is what I think is happening. Clyburn, Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, who none of which he reached out to, at one point are going to reach out to him. And they're going to probably say, I really think you should consider stepping aside. And he's going to say no. And Jill's going to say no. He's going to say, I had one bad day. I got 1,200 electoral votes. You can leave now. And there's one bad tactical decision after the next, too. I mean, one bad tactical decision, not calling up Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer right away and say, listen, I know what people are saying. Don't worry about it. I had a bad night. I worked too hard. I think it was accumulation of everything. I got it down now. And then they would have turned around and said, talk to President Biden. Man, he reached out right away. I appreciate the respect. And he is on this game, wants this job, wants everyone to feel better about it. But instead, they were twisting. And you know, also some drama behind the scenes came clear. I texted Joe Manchin yesterday to see if he wanted to come on. I had no idea what he wanted to say, but he knows it. Biden's not up for the job. He's basically said the same thing, but he's changed his party to independent. I thought he might be willing to talk. Well, almost 15 minutes after I texted him, I see online this story that Joe Manchin last weekend was going to go on a Sunday show and blow up Joe Biden and say he's lost my support. He should step out as a candidate because he's not mentally up to it. And Chuck Schumer and other leaders called him up and said, Joe, please don't do that because you don't want to be the first to knife Caesar. You know, you want to be like Doggett could go knife Caesar. The bullet, you're not going to get any blood. But those guys, Joe Manchin's known by everybody just because he stands up to his own party and then also lets Republicans down from time to time. And then number two, he comes out and says he should step down or not run again. That's significant. And it gives a lot of people cover and also sends a lot of notice that if you are in a battleground state, you're going to your Casey and you're going against McCormick, your Tester and you're going against Sheehy, you are Tammy Baldwin in a tough fight to keep your seat in a dead heat. You don't want to be with President Biden, but at least they could come up with a battle plan to continue. But again, they thought they could just run right through it. It'll take a few days. People forget about it. Remember, you wanted that debate. You formatted that debate. You picked the venue for the debate. You did everything except pick the topics. You picked the moderators. And because you could not perform, your campaign has fallen apart. I'm not sure you'll get up.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Live appearances. I'm just having side. I know we're back. I'm just having a side conversation with Tyrus.
Extorting me.
Instead of, I just had a casual conversation. I just said, "Looks like you're taking the summer off because your first appearance."
He said that my performances lately look like I took the summer off. It was highly, highly offensive.
Now, do you think I would wait for the door to close and then say something like that?
Yeah, as he kicked his soccer ball around. So yeah.
Right. I noticed you didn't want to kick it around with me. So like Jason Chaffetz and guys like that with a soccer background will get up and play. Kennedy will play soccer with me. You didn't even effort.
Listen,
you're a football guy.
Well, not just that. Listen, my daughter plays soccer. So
what do you think?
And I'm a fan of soccer now. I'm a soccer dad on top of her other things. And
how old is she?
She's 10.
And, so it's getting serious now. Travel,
oh, it's
right?
Yeah, it was. She's on traveling team, and she usually plays in the defensive spot. But she's led her team in assists,
wow.
So she's really good at it. And her nickname's Thunderfoot because she was one of the kids that could kick a goal from the other side of the goal. So
tall.
Yeah, she's getting there. She didn't sprout like her brother, but she's starting to get there. Like I noticed it the other day. Like all my kids are taller than Dana and Greg. So
that's great. But, you know, the other thing, you know, Dennis Rodman's daughter is one of the best players in the world. She's on the national team.
She's doing well. It's always nice to see, especially when and I don't know the whole family dynamic, but you always like to see guys that you played with, their kids do well also. You know, we never hear the good stories. It's always the sad stories of the kids that were neglected and didn't turn out well. It's nice to hear, like, some of the people who took that career path and it opened up doors for their kids too.
Right. So Tyrus is here. You doing Gutfeld today?
Yeah.
Are you hosting?
I mean, from underneath, yeah. I host from underneath.
When he's out, you're one of the guys, right?
Yeah, when he's out, yeah.
Is he going to be out during any of this vacation, do you know?
Take vacations, you have to have, like, people to go see, right? I think Greg has gotten to the point between his insults of you and Waters. I think he's – and Lizow. I think he's running out of friends and places to go.
Like, and he didn't have a lot anyway.
He wasn't starting with a plethora. Yeah. Let's be honest.
It's not like he's weeding him out.
Yeah, it wasn't a cornucopia of destinations. For him to go.
But Tyrus, your range are through the roof.
Yeah, we're definitely hitting our stride.
And number one in all of cable in demo. Yeah. That means you got the next generation queued up.
Yeah, gee, I wonder where that's coming from. I don't know.
You do relate to the younger folks.
I do, yes. Right. Kat does. Greg relates to everybody in a weird, he's the uncle who always tells the joke that nobody wants to hear. You know what I mean? Yeah. But he's going to tell it anyways. So right.
I've got to ask you too, before we leave the sports topic, how do you feel about Bronny James being drafted in the second round?
I don't care. You know, like this makes me laugh to myself every time. I'm a diehard Patriot fan, and I never once heard anyone crying about Belichick's son being promoted to defensive coordinator. You think he was the most qualified for that guy? Like, he got the job. What do you think
Belichick left, he got the job?
I'm saying he was brought in, and he was given a job by his dad, a high-status job. Would he have gotten as fast somewhere else? Probably not.
No way.
The difference is, though, coaching is an opinion, an expression. So whether he was good or bad is indifferent. Where Bronny is, his dad got him a tryout, or he got him in the door. Okay, great. That's happened everywhere. In every situation, in every scenario, whether it's sports or whatever, it's just funny when it's it seems like when LeBron or somebody of high status does what everyone else is doing, it makes me kind of snicker, because he's still got to make shots in the basket. He's still got to – they're not going to keep him on the team. He'll get drafted. You know how many guys get drafted every year that will never see the court?
Yep.
So, you know.
It's only two rounds, my goodness.
It's two rounds plus a lot of guys in the summer league. So, you know – He can play through the summer league, and let's say he has a horrible summer league, he can get cut. I mean, that's the reality of it. So
I would personally, I'm not a basketball aficionado, but just looking, I would love to have seen him stay in college, and because he had that heart a year ago today, he had that heart ailment. They were wondering if he's going to play again. He gets on USC, worked his way back gradually, and then goes pro.
Yeah,
I just think he put a lot of pressure on himself rather than stay in Los Angeles, live near your dad. And play for USC.
Because it's not like he was hurting for the money.
He's already making millions on NIL.
And that's the thing that you worry about the kids today. You have two thoughts on it. One, you like to see, because the school's taking in all the money, and it's nice to see the kids are able to earn a little skrill on their name. The other side of it, though, is the amateur status of it is gone. The purity of the these kids playing ball, but.
Or student athlete
in general. No, it's a professional business now. So, which I feel like there should be. Again, I see both sides of it. I feel like if it wasn't going to be monetary compensation, if you play for a school, and especially a big school that makes a lot of money, you and your family should probably have free tuition. I mean, they could have done things up until that point. To make it more profitable for kids. But what's the difference now? Stay at USC, go to the Lakers. The only difference is you only have to get up for basketball practice with the Lakers. USC, you still got to go to school. So,
but you're playing with guys 20, 15 years older.
Yeah. No, he's got, like I said, he'll probably be in the G League. We probably won't see much of him.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think he'll be on the G League.
For his development, I'd love it.
Yeah, he's going to the G League. He's not going to just sit in the bench all year and watch. He'll be in the G League. And if he does well in the G League, you'll see him pull up. Celtics did that with our first-round draft pick last year. He played maybe six games, but he was leading the G League in scoring and dunks. So, you know, and then you brought him up. They brought him up a little bit, and apparently he did so well that they put him on the playoff roster. So that would be like a goal for Bronny, I think.
Isaiah Hartenstein, who has now got millions of dollars to go to Oklahoma, shine for the Knicks. He was the G League MVP.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So they kind of – the NBA, it's not the same NBA like when Bird and Magic played, where it's the NBA or nothing. So he's going to be in the G League probably two or three years, unless he just exceeds expectations. But most of these second-round draft picks are really being drafted for the G League.
And so, J.J. Redick, his coach, will see how he develops
and
as
J.J.,
a player.
From what every instance I've ever seen him work, seems to be a pretty straight-up, no-nonsense guy. So he's not going to sugarcoat it. And also, I think LeBron probably knows the level of his son's game, and he's been playing this game for a long time. So if LeBron James is telling you to go, I think that's an awesome, because dad's not going to be able to play the defense. Well, his dad doesn't play defense anyways, but his dad's not going to be able to go out there and play for him. He's going to have to play. So that's, and Bronny will make it. Or
sports is still the meritocracy, the only pure meritocracy.
So in place, you're not getting an argument. Well, that's not true either.
I'll tell you what, I think that you mirror my frustration when you see every network now realizing that Joe Biden's faltering and not all there and freezes up. And now all of a sudden they're realizing it. Here is Jake Tapper, of all people, who spent most of his career just ripping Donald Trump. Now he says this, cut 26.
There is a pattern, discernible pattern, of Democratic officials seemingly trying to convince you, the public, to not believe what you saw and what you heard with your eyes and with your ears on Thursday night. The spinning is all very reminiscent of the George Orwell quote from the book 1984 that I invoked 5 years ago for a different situation and a different president.
Your floor.
Well, first, you're too late to the dance, Jake. It's nice to see you want to be a journalist now. That's the what we've learned. First of all, we have a shadow government because we don't know who's running our country, because it damn sure ain't Joe Biden. Is it Jill? Is it JPK? Is it a combination? Is it the
Who's running the Defense
FBI?
Department? We had a defense secretary disappear for 3 weeks, and the president didn't know nobody knows.
So we don't know who's doing what, but we do see the policies, and we see the reaction of it. So, and now all of a sudden, this is something that is laughable. This was not – nobody was surprised, okay? I didn't get a text from you going, did you see that? There was not one person, and I have friends who don't watch news that watch the debate, okay? And I didn't get a text. Nobody
they
was
knew.
Like, because they'll hit me up like I have some insight. Right. I love when they're like, so have you talked to the president? And I used to mess with them and be like, well, no, he called me this morning, but I was busy. I didn't answer. You know, I was working out. I don't pick up the phone when I lift. And then it got to the point where people really thought I was true when I actually haven't spoken to either of the presidents. But it just goes back to the same thing. I think you and I are upset about the same thing, is that we have been – that we in real time, in our lifetime, we just – it's like, oh, Carl, this is bigger than Watergate. Well, Carl, this is bigger than Watergate, and you were complicit.
So Carl Bernstein said 15 to 20 times over the last 6 months
– a week.
He freezes.
Yeah.
He freezes
now,
up.
Now, all of a sudden, now they have no choice. But what we're seeing is – and this is the positive when I'm looking at it. When we're seeing the reactions from the White House personnel, you can tell who's in and who's out. And we even that night on TV, we saw who was in and who's out. See, Vance isn't in on CNN. Vance isn't apparently not getting the memo, because we got a
Van
raw.
Jones.
Yeah, Van Jones. He came out and gave us real time journalistic factual
analysis,
experience of what was going on. And he said, it's over. And then he even made it personal. He said, I like the guy. I love the guy. He's a nice man. But it's over.
Right.
By the time the break came back, Jones had a whole different facial expression. And he just got a phone call from a black leader tearing my butt up in this. And he had to basically retract everything that he said. So the disgusting part, what bothers me, and I think it bothers you, is when I hear the line of questioning. So what are they going to do now? What? Excuse me? He's not running a country. They're trying to convince the American people that Biden is a better alternative than Kamala. That's a joke.
So listen to this was developed. This story came out 1 hour ago, less than an hour. Biden has told an ally that he's weighing whether to continue in the race. And he also came out and said that if he knows if he freezes up or has incidents like he did one or two more times, it's over. And the White House has pushed back on it. But now Jim Clyburn, I haven't heard this yet, just said this about possible replacement.
And so you can actually fashion the process that's already in place to make it a mini primary. And I would support that. Absolutely. We can't close that down and wish to open up everything for the general elector. And I think that Kamala Harris would acquit herself very well in that kind of a process. But then it would be fair to everybody. Mm-hmm. So all of the other governors who may be interested, and there are some that I would be interested in hearing from as well.
So he's already postulating how what would happen if Biden steps aside.
Well, because we know he's not part of it. Because no one else is talking like that. Everyone else is doubling down. The media is now, they're already telling on themselves. They're coming out with a, well, if Trump gets in, he's going to come after me. And they're going to come get me. No, no, no. You should get a call from the Department of Justice because you were doing quid pro quo with the United States government pushing false narratives for play. Because what did you get by running with the White House? You got all the what? You got all the interviews. Fox didn't get an interview. You get an interview with the president?
Nope.
The vice president?
Nope.
No, of course not. You're no, so
when has he ever talked to Peter Ducey except for an abstract question? Imagine following a guy for 3.5 years and getting 4 questions out.
Yeah, it's what I'm saying to that point. So it's not like they – not only did they get the interview with the president, which still means something. It still matters. Then the networks give them specials and book deals. So it's very advantageous for the left – mainstream media to get in, and they got in bed with them, right. And they were getting away with it because they were being able to spin. And then the one time, because the world saw what everyone else who was paying attention was already seeing, the difference was there was no one there to deflect it right away, and we saw it. Right. And then, you know, and then afterwards, oh, he had a bad night. You can't have a bad night as United States president.
Right.
Obama, bad night is a nuclear holocaust.
Right, but Obama had a bad night, but we're okay with that.
Yeah.
That's called being out debated.
Yeah,
I lost by 21 points to the third place team. If you're the first place team, sometimes that happens.
Right, but you didn't lose because you were facing the wrong way at kickoff.
Thank you. Here's what former New York Times editor Jill Abramson said. Tell me if you agree. Obviously, the president decline was a super hard story to report, even with those who wanted to get it, like the Wall Street Journal. Their story did not deliver, using mostly named GOP sources. But I do think if enough reporters had pushed, the story was reportable. I worry that too many journalists didn't try to get the story because they did not want to be accused of helping elect Donald Trump. That's the former editor of the New York Times.
Which just told this on is- everybody that... The journalists are dead.
It's not up to you to decide.
The pundits,
help,
they are yeah. pundits now. This
it's
is the
crazy.
Pundit. It's CNN is a pundit for the White House, or they might as well be.
So listen, Tyrus is not going to be working in July and August on the stage, but he'll be in Cornwallis, Oregon, on the 12th for 2 days. And then in Idaho, September 14th and 15th. It's the 16th in Cheyenne, Wyoming. He sold out in Illinois on the 26th. In Decatur on the 27th. Oh, my God, this is a crazy schedule. Batesville, Indiana, then Troy, Michigan on the 29th. You'll see it all on LinkTR.
You get tickets on linktree.com. Wow, you're so old. And, by the way, I'm not taking the month off of July. My tour in July is... sold off. It's Linktree.
It?
Yeah, we've got to.
But
does he have a person? We have a person for your social media. My goodness. This is why I get called on here so much to bail you out.
Right.
I'll take it from here, kid.
No, wait. We'll be back.
We'll be back and I'll clear it up. Because
if we
told everyone on my July tour that's already sold out that I'm not working. So we will be back. One of us will be.
I hope it's me.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, we're back. We've got a few more minutes with Tyrus. We both survived it. I did not know, Tyrus, I knew you were popular, but I didn't know you sold out the summer.
Yeah,
I thought you just took the summer off.
No, summer tour is sold out.
All right, so you don't like to brag. I would.
No.
If I sold out, I would have sold out all over.
What are you talking about? You've wrote, and I'm telling you right now, this
But if I sold out my live shows months ahead of time, I'd make sure it said sold out all the time. And said, oh, I'm sorry. Did you? I shouldn't have listed that. It says sold out. Why don't you just focus on the ones that we just got?
I prefer to – the best revenge in life is success. But even better than that is silent success where they have to go up to you and be like, hey, are your shows sold out? And then you go, are they?
What? Doesn't matter.
Really?
Yeah. It doesn't matter to me.
Well, look, who would have known? Wow. Really? All of them, huh? All right, cool.
So when you get questions from the audience, are they mostly wrestling questions?
No, never wrestling questions.
Movies?
No.
It's all about
It's always the first. I'm going to be honest with you. The first thing they ask me a lot of times is, first thing I want to know is who's taller, Kilmeade or Gutfeld? That's one of the questions I get asked a lot. And my answer is always the same. I said, Kilmeade, it's not even close. He's got him by a good 3 or 4 inches. So, I always get questions, how the hell did you get at Fox?
Right.
Like, how do people treat you there?
And people treat you great, right?
Yeah. Well, they have no choice.
you use the gym?
You know, it's not like, yeah. I always have fun with them. And I always tell for a while, there was a rumor going around when I first got here that I was Rupert's dirty little secret. Because my last name is Murdoch, and we're both spelled the same. So, and I have a sense of humor, so I didn't
do anything,
to stop it. No,
right.
I was like, oh, of course he can wear his hat backwards. Rupert's, he's the other Murdoch, you know. So there was a lot of those rumors going around, which I enjoyed thoroughly.
So listen, go to how do we go find out where to?
So okay, because
Linktree,
Kill Me doesn't know. This is it's really sad. Of all your accomplishments, social media is not one of them.
But Linktree, yeah, Tyrus.
Just go to Smash. Planet Tyrus or Tyrus Smash.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.